Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
Recording now.
Yes, recording now.
Plaque for the alternates is down in the ladies' room.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, you kill me. You really do.
Maverick. I'm curious. Who was covering Cougar while you were showboating with this MiG? Cougar was doing just fine. You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. Nice, man.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network. I'm, of course, Tier 2 and Mike. Joining me once again is Steve Megatron. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. Today we are doing a double feature, and those films were 16 years apart at the point of the sequels being released in 2022.
16 years? What the fuck am I talking about over here? Editor TFG and Mike, I don't know how Steve didn't catch this and interrupt me and correct me on this, but 16 years between Top Gun 1 and 2? No. 36 years is what I meant to say, so no one comes at me in the comments. We were 36 years between 1986 and 2022 of the release between Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick. Now on with the show.
However, in 1986, we go to Top Gun. Tom Cruise, Val Kilmer, Anthony Edwards, and so many more. And because sometimes my brain works and sometimes I remember stuff. They did a theatrical 3D re-release of Top Gun in theaters in 2013. My mom and I went to it at the time, and I actually wrote up an article for our website, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I remember when I did that. So I went back and I looked at the article and I'm like, there's a little bit in there about getting to see the film in theaters, because the film came out when I was 6 years old and you were just, you know, popping out in 1986.
Har, har, har.
You know, so because Top Gun originally released in theaters May 16th of 1986. So pretty much a month and 2 days before you were born. So there's that. But yeah, no, when I back in 2013, 12 years ago, when they did the re-release, I was like, ooh, hey, I'd love to see. I've always seen Top Gun on TV and on DVD and whatever else at the time. And I'm like, that would be kind of cool to see Top Gun in theaters. So we went, and it was more about seeing how well, because the point of that was, this is a 3D re-release, because remember back in 2012 when 3D was all the everything, 3D everything.
I hated that.
Well, I'm looking back at this article, and I'll link it in the show notes, folks, so y'all can read it, but I'm reading this article I wrote, and like, for me, with vision problems that I have, it's like, I never liked 3D glasses. I never cared for them. I never did this, never did that, whatever else. And I know when we were doing shows with Michael Powers and stuff, I think, and Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong, if you're even listening, I'll point this out to you so you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think he liked the 3D stuff. For me, it was more of, as long as it's smooth, as long as it doesn't jitter around, as long as it doesn't, you know, and at the time, it was fine. I was actually surprised how good the 3D was for Top Gun in theaters in 2013. But next year is its 40th anniversary. And We are covering it now only because earlier this month, Val Kilmer passed away, and Val Kilmer was Iceman in the first movie, and obviously he returned in 2022's sequel. Had you ever seen Top Gun before?
So I had seen Top Gun before. It had been probably around the time we started the network.
Mm-hmm.
Was the first time I ever saw it. And I may have caught like the end of it in the past before that, but not enough to really remember it. And so when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, so this is why all of this, you know, played out the way it did. You know, I didn't know what to expect, really, because I hadn't fully watched it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I'm more impressed with it now that I'm older. Okay. Like, I think it was too... It's kind of funny. I thought it was too slow in certain aspects when I was younger, I guess. Like, I don't know. Like, but looking at it now, I'm like, this is pretty much the right pace. I mean, I skipped through like some of the romance sections in both films. But more so just because I was like, all right, just keep me in the academy here. You know, some of the relationship stuff, you know, as far as like the friends were concerned, like I watched that because it was pertinent, but like I didn't really care about the love life part of it. I was just like, let's keep moving here. But it's, I don't know, I really enjoyed it upon rewatch, which I was surprised.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's good. I like I said, I've seen the original film multiple times over in the last 39 years. I think the first time I saw it was probably right after I saw Days of Thunder in 1990. Days of Thunder, also Tom Cruise, race car instead of plane. But yeah, this is one of those, it falls in line with Beverly Hills Cop 1 and 2 to me. It falls in line with some of the other 80s action movies simply because of Harold Faltermeyer's score and his music. The music in this movie just, it fits, it works. Sometimes I did this watch, between watching this and watching the sequel, I thought that the sequel did the music, like the blend of the music and the vocal performances of the actors and the actresses and everything else going on, I felt like the sequel is a little bit better. Like it's mixed better in the sequel. The original film, I don't know, sometimes the music overpowers certain scenes at times. And I'm not just talking about the action scenes. So there's that. But yeah, no, I was the original film, I just, every time I watch it, I just absolutely just forget everything and just have fun with it. It's just so fun. So for those that don't know, but people should probably know after 39 years, Top Gun is all about U.S. Navy naval aviator Lieutenant Pete Maverick Mitchell and his radar intercept officer, Lieutenant Junior Grade Nick Goose Bradshaw. And they are running maneuvers in their F-14 Tomcat and doing all this stuff. Then they get called away to intercept and do all this stuff. And it's a movie. It's an 80s action movie that I don't like. When I think 80s action movie, I always think of Top Gun, but I don't know. I don't know if it's because it stands out, not above the rest of them, but it just has that feeling of just a little bit higher than some of the rest of the 80s action movies. Because some of the other ones are, I don't know, we might have to do a separate episode on the art of 80s action movies in general or something. What are your thoughts on what did you like about the original Top Gun?
I liked the emotion that Tom Cruise had in his character. Like, don't get me wrong, I know he shows a lot of it in Maverick, especially when it concerns, you know, Iceman and Rooster and things like that. But I feel like Tom Cruise, like, the older he gets, the less emotion that shows up on his face. Like, if that makes any sense. Like, because it's like, oh, he's kind of the everyman action guy. And it's not that I dislike him in the movie. Like, I think he does a great job in pretty much everything he's in. But he does play pretty much the same character in everything he's in.
Yeah.
You know, much the same way that a lot of other action stars are kind of typecast. But I liked that aspect. I liked the dynamic with him and Goose. I liked the dynamic with him and Iceman. I liked the Jets. I liked the fact that he was this hotshot and thought that nothing could touch him. And yes, he did break records and do the impossible, but it came at a cost because one of his, you know, cocky endeavors at one point cost the life of his friend.
Yep.
And he had to learn that the hard way. And so it's something that stuck with him and ate at him into the second film. And so I felt like you had this natural character progression from the start of the film to the end as they traversed, you know, the 8-week program.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just that scene where when that happens, where he says, "Watch the canopy," and I'm thinking, okay, how did that even happen? Because I don't know if it's because again, they found no fault of his. It was an accident. It looked like equipment failure to me, like the seat went too fast or the seat did something it shouldn't have done, or the canopy just wasn't moved in time. Obviously, for the plot needs Goose to unfortunately die. But yeah, I've always questioned that scene as far as like, wait a minute. He warned him. I don't know. It is what it is. What didn't you like about the original film?
I mean, I didn't really find a whole lot I didn't like. Some of the sound mixing with the music, I definitely noticed some of it was too high.
Yep.
And then some of it, they were in places where it just like in this weird abrupt stop. And it was jarring enough that like it took me out of it. And as an audio person, I was like, wait, what happened here?
Yeah.
I'm like, and so I went back to like make sure that it just wasn't my device glitching, and it wasn't. And it was kind of surprising. But I mean, I liked it overall. Like, there wasn't much that I didn't like. Like I said, I fast forwarded pretty much through the sections where it was
the sex scene and things like that.
And like some of the other, I mean, some of it like in the classroom type stuff was kind of funny, and the chase down. And then I liked the fact that, you know, he was about to drop out, you know, and had to kind of come to terms with it. And, you know, he'd kind of earned the sympathy from the others. And but I mean, you still have, it's still a very similar story between the first and the second film with the father of the one pilot having died, and the other one trying to make up for it and, you know, stand above the name. And so I didn't despise anything in particular from the first film. There were aspects of the second film that were kind of like, okay, like, we get it.
Yeah, we'll get into the second film here in a minute, but yeah, I don't know. I still overall, like, yeah, like, I remember when I wrote up the article for the 3D re-release, the only thing, and I'm not a prude at all, but the only thing that I had a problem with was the sex scene on the big
screen. It seemed like it dragged on.
God. It's not even that it drags on. It's just they don't show anything, but just the, maybe you're right. Maybe it is that it drags on, but like, it just feels like when they're in bed together and they're doing their thing, it just feels like it's somebody put Bounce Chicken Wah Wah on slur. Like it's talking like the like it really felt like it was in slow motion. And I know it's a nitpick, folks, we get it, but it is what it is. At the end of the day, it doesn't take away my enjoyment of the film, but I remember when I saw that in theaters, I'm like, oh, that's a little okay.
It was a little long.
Yeah, a little long in the tooth. Overall, though, still love the first film. I love that soundtrack. La La Land Records released a limited edition 2-CD set, I think a couple of years ago. Maybe it was last year. I don't remember. I've got it. So got it in the closet somewhere. It's on my computer now, and I was listening to that. Harold Faltermeyer, man, oh, man, this guy, I love his scores. I love the way he makes music. At least in the 80s for the 80s stuff, like, man, he was so good. Yeah, and you're right. Mr. Cruz, in the modern day, it seems like he, like, when he started, he debuted in Endless Love as Billy in 1981. He went from that to Taps to Losing It to Outsiders to Risky Business, All the Right Moves, Legend, Top Gun, Color of Money, Cocktail, Rain Man, Days of Thunder, Far and Away, Few Good Men, Firm, Interview with the Vampire, 96, next year will be 30 years for Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire. But like from 2010 to now, 2011 to now, it's either Mission Impossible or Jack Reacher. Yeah, pretty much. He did American Made in 2017. He did, is that a remake or he did another version of The Mummy in 2017.
That movie was terrible.
I didn't see that one, and I don't like the original one because I'm not a Brendan Fraser fan, but
I am. I liked it, but
I don't know. I don't know how much more acting Mr. Cruz is going to be doing after 2026. Right now we've got Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, which is out now from last year. No. From 2 years ago, and then later this year, The Final Reckoning on May. I want to say, is it May? When's that releasing? May 23rd. So probably by the time people hear this, most likely you'll probably hear this before then, folks. But May 23rd is The Final Reckoning for the I guess final mission. I don't know. I mean, for being over 50, he sure has. I mean, he's got a very extensive, long-running career. Every time he shows up, it's like, oh, cool. But I do like more of his older stuff because it's more varied than just, hey, let's just stick to the franchises. Not that there's anything wrong with franchises. Oh, wow, he's 62.
But the thing is, I mean, yeah, he's looking older, but he's kind of, he hasn't hit, like, grandpa stage of actor yet.
No, not yet.
Like, he doesn't look like he could play it yet, which is the amazing part. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like, yes, he does have a very differing career and a lot of range in his older stuff. His newer stuff is pretty much action.
Yeah.
But not that I dislike it. I just, it's different stuff. So, I mean, I've watched a lot of his movies and I genuinely enjoy him as an actor in a lot of his films. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of cool to see young Tom Cruise here.
Yeah. Yeah. Young Tom Cruise was always very, very cool. And obviously, folks, what we're here for, because of his recent passing, we kind of talked about his filmography and things like that in the Batman Forever episode last time. But Val Kilmer, I mean, and we're going to do more. I don't know if it'll be with Steve and I, but I'm going to be doing more Val Kilmer movies throughout the year just to. Because the dude was a great actor. He really was. I mean, him in this, like, just that antithesis of what I almost said Ethan Hunt, Maverick is, of what Pete Mitchell is. That's what Iceman, that's what Iceman is, you know, and they event, you know, it's two very different styles of how they approach things, and they eventually get along, become friends, and shake hands, and all this and all that, and just, I love the way Val acted. He was such a great actor.
Yeah.
And then Anthony Edwards, you know, the funny thing about Anthony Edwards, who was Goose, the only other thing I remember him from is, he was in Revenge of the Nerds. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But really, where I remember him from is ER. The TV show ER. That's all I remember him from. He was Dr. Mark Green from 94 to 2008. Well, 94 to 2002, and then he returned in 2008. But, I mean, he's got some films in his filmography that are pretty good, too, other than Top Gun. He was in Revenge of the Nerds, too, so there's that. Oh, he was in two of the Revenge of the Nerds movies. I liked him as Goose, though. He was good. What's funny about talking about Val Kilmer is that later, from the point of Top Gun, later on in 1999, Iceman and Charlie will reunite in 1999. So, Kelly McGillis, did I say that right? Yes, Kelly McGillis, who plays Charlie in this, she starred in. She was Val's character's sister in At First Sight from 1999. Val played Virgil Adamson. This movie is based on a true lie, a real story about someone who was blind and things like that. It stars him, her, also stars Mira Sorvino. And I remember in 99, I was like, hey, wait a minute. That's Iceman. And that's the instructor. Yeah. So that was a nice little reunion. And honestly, that's, other than At First Sight, that is all. Other than Top Gun and At First Sight, that's all I'd ever seen Kelly McGillis in. She was in Maverick, but she was uncredited because it was archival footage from the original film. So she's not, wait, what? Oh, documentary. Why is there a documentary filmer? Oh. The Bratz documentary from last year. It's a documentary
discussing the Brat Pack from the 80s.
Huh, might have to watch that, actually. It's on Hulu.
Anyway. See, this is what happens when I get distracted, folks. Don't distract me when I'm doing stuff.
Yep. Well, you did it to yourself.
Yeah, I know. That's I'm talking to myself, don't you know? we also have two other amazing... I mean, we've got many other amazing people here, but I'm going to probably stop the cast after this. But the other two that are very noticeable is Michael Ironside as Jester. I will recognize Michael Ironside anywhere because of his voice.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he's kind of the quintessential, like, army dick bad guy, like, or antagonist, like, just, and he plays it well.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. And then we got McFly, you're nothing but a slacker. We got James Tolkien as Commander Tom Stinger Jerry. We got fucking Strickland from Back to the Future in Top Gun. I love this. I love this. I love James Tolkien. I wish he had more in film. Well, he was in the medieval horror. Holy crap. I mean, he did do a lot of films, but like, oh, that's right. Year after this, so after Top Gun, he was Detective Hugh Lubick in Masters of the Universe from 1987. He was in Problem Child 2 for some odd reason. Nobody knows why. But yeah.
Would have been kind of cool to see some of the other older actors in the second film from this
one. Yeah, yeah.
Show up at the scene with Iceman.
Yeah,
or lack thereof.
The funeral, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Something I'm going to have to look up for later. Tom Wilson, humbly super famous documentary, because Tolkien is in that as himself, so I'm going to have to look that up at some point. But yeah, I mean, I always, when actors or actresses have a impact on me, whether it's just one film or two films or whatever else, I usually end up following them to whatever else they go to, kind of thing. And James Tolkien is one of those where he's got the look, he's got the voice, and you just immediately think, oh, he's going to do this or he's going to do that. So, but yeah, the Tom Wilson documentary was the last thing he did currently. Before that, Expedition Back to the Future, Strickland Guard, Season 1, Episode. What is that from 2021? Huh. I didn't think they were doing a Back to the Future TV series. Anyway. So yeah, very, very cool. Meg, we're not going to go through all of Meg Ryan. You all know Meg Ryan, but, Goose, honey, take me to bed or lose me for, oh God, that scene. I love that piano scene. And I love how they they homage and they do their own thing with it in the sequel. But that scene, oh man, that was just awesome. She was in this like for 2 seconds. It was longer than 2 seconds. She was in it for like 2 different scenes. But yeah.
You can be my wingman anytime. Bullshit. You can be mine.
Yeah. What the hell?
Good morning, aviators. This is your captain speaking. Having any fun yet?
So moving 36 years into the future for Top Gun Maverick, this one picks up more than 30 years after Maverick graduating from Top Gun training school, decorated test pilot, whose insubordination has kept him from flag rank. I like this. We open up with him being a test pilot for these supersonic jets, and by the end of this film, he has to go back to the F-14 Tomcat. basically saying, hey, go back to 1986, you idiot. And this one isn't like the other. It is and it isn't like the first film. This one, they're trying to destroy an unsanctioned uranium enrichment plant in an unnamed foreign country before it becomes operational. I like that they do the unnamed foreign country. I like that they don't.
Well, they were also trying to not ruffle feathers like Back to the Future did.
Yeah, exactly. It was the Libyans. The Libyans did it. That's Back to the Future, folks. Again, I like the music in this. The music, it's okay. So, yes, the Faltermeyer score is here because you're going to use the same cues as the original film. And then Lady Gaga and Hans Zimmer. And then I saw in the actual film that Lorne Balf is credited, but he's not credited on the Wikipedia article for the film as working on the music, which is weird. That usually is not the case. And I like Lorne Balf. He's an awesome composer. He's done a lot of music for a lot of films that we know and love. But I want to go down here because I want to see. Did they really? Nope. Huh. Weird. I know he got some sort of credit in the movie. I saw it on the screen, folks. Oh, there it is. 2022. I keep forgetting. He was the score producer for Top Gun Maverick. We'll have to do a different episode on him another day, but yeah, I think the music was done well in this. I think it was balanced a little bit better. What about you? What are your likes, dislikes for Maverick?
So I liked the fact that we were playing around with the new Top Gun class and Maverick trying to prove that a pilot is still better than a drone.
Yep.
And eventually succeeds in his breaking 10 G's.
Yep.
So that was fun. And then there's the fact that he's introduced a rooster.
Yep.
In this part, which is Goose's son. And there's that animosity there. And he's riding that fine line of trying to protect him and let him be his own person.
Yeah.
And then I love that they got Iceman back in for the kind of farewell and kind of helping center Maverick.
Yep.
So that was cool getting Val Kilmer back in, and I'm glad that Tom Cruise kind of pushed for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it's if you're going to bring back somebody from the original, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the Admiral's girlfriend, the Admiral's daughter.
Yep.
That was referenced in the first film.
Yep.
Actually showing up, which is Jennifer Connelly.
Connelly, yep.
Yeah. So I thought that was funny that they were like, oh, we brought in a character that was mentioned but wasn't actually in it.
Yep.
So, I mean, there was that. There was, I loved the drone fights, or not the drone, the fighter pilots scenes. I love the fact that Maverick took everybody out constantly in the testing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's like, boom, you're dead, boom, you're dead, boom, you're dead. And then he would call them all out on their crazy stuff and then hit the brakes and flip the jet. And and then the fact that they got into another F-14.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of cool. He's like, I wonder if I remember this.
Oh man, that line. Yeah, I just, there is some lines in this where I was just like, oh man, so cool. Yeah, absolutely.
And like overall, I enjoyed this film just as much in a different way.
Yeah.
Cause you had Maverick, you know, teaching the new rookies, and you had the new hotshot that's basically like a younger him.
Yep.
Mixed with Iceman.
Yep.
And Miles Teller does really good at playing Goose's Brewster. Son.
Yep.
The Glenn Powell character, I forget who he plays. I zone out on names.
He was Lieutenant Jake Hangman's.
Yeah, Hangman. Yeah, it's sad because I just watched it literally and I can't remember his call sign.
We old, man. We old.
To be honest, the story was Roosters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then Maverick is a secondary. And then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably the bigger out of these characters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, I liked, you know, the fact that, you know, Ed Harris was replacing the same role as his direct supervisor in the first film. And, yep. And then you had, John Hamm playing the air boss.
But, yeah. The vice admiral Cyclone. Yeah.
So I don't know. I really liked how all of this kind of played out. It was interesting because I thought like some of the Top Gun students were going to die because
yeah,
they were like, oh, this happens. Like, oh, he blacked out. Oh, the plane's on fire. And it's like, oh, yeah, they're going to kill three of the Top Gun students.
Mm-hmm.
Like right off the bat. And they're like, no, we're not killing anybody.
Yeah. The blackouts from the G's and then the plane fire. Oh. Whew.
And then Maverick almost blacked out.
Yeah, almost.
But he didn't.
Yeah, luckily.
No, and then Hangman coming in and, you know, helping and then having the respect for Rooster. And by the end, kind of like mirroring Iceman and Maverick in the first. So, I mean, that was cool. And then kind of seeing them all proceeding on in their life, more or less.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah. I enjoyed it for what it was. It's a modern version of the original in a sense, but it kind of is that natural progression that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very well done. Tom can still act the way that he did, even though he's older, obviously, now. Again, 36-year difference between 86 and 22.
Yeah, it's nice seeing Maverick and Rooster like kind of taking on that father son role. Since
they
were both cheated.
Yeah.
Fixing the Mustang.
Exactly. Well, not necessarily fixed before that when they were, when they got shot down or when they whatever. Like when they were in the woods together.
Yeah.
Right before they stole the F-14.
Yep.
When they were so that scene was like, oh, cool. It's looking at Miles Teller as the character of Rooster. I was like, huh, he's a younger Goose. Okay. I understand the character is supposed to be the son of Goose. I get that. But I'm saying, like, they picked somebody in Hollywood that resembled what Anthony Edwards looked like in the original movie enough to where it's so believable that you don't even give it a second thought and you just look at it as this is the character. Just pay attention to the damn story. And it was so fun seeing the two of them do what they did with the stuff. And I forgot those. No, they weren't. For some odd reason, I thought the Tomcat, the seat was back to back. But it's not, right? No, it's not. Can't be. It's not. I remember seeing him get in the car. I'm losing my mind, folks. Anyway, Top Gun. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but it was kind of funny, even like the whole bar scene where the Top Gun students chuck him out of the bar. and Hangman was one of the ones tossing him out.
Yeah.
And then he hears the Great Balls of Fire by Rooster, which brought back the memories, you know. And then, of course, the next day, they're like, oh, crap, we threw this guy out of the bar yesterday.
Well, when they were about to throw him out the bar, I thought the bar was on the ship. I thought the bar, like...
Oh, me too. I thought they were going to throw him overboard.
Yeah, they kept saying, throw him overboard, throw him overboard. Like, I thought they were going to throw him into the damn ocean. And no, they're just throwing them. Okay. All right. Cool. But yeah, no, it was fun. It was a fun watch. Top Gun's always fun to watch. Like, I almost didn't watch it because I still remember it to this day, but I figured I would be authentic to doing the recording and making sure I did my due diligence. And I did watch both of them, and watching the sequel was very, very cool. I think I'm perfect. I'm leading into something here, folks. I think I'm perfectly fine with where they left everybody at the end of this movie. However, in May of 22, Teller revealed that he had been pitching a sequel, which would be tentatively titled Top Gun Rooster, and centered on his character to Paramount Pictures. By July of the same year, he stated that he has been having ongoing discussions with Cruise regarding a sequel. And in January of last year, it was reported that a sequel is in development. No, don't stop. It's perfectly fine where it is. We had everything we needed with Rooster in this movie, as far as his characterization and things like that. Top Gun does not need to be the next franchise player in Hollywood of having 7 fucking movies. Yeah, it's got 2. But it took 36 years for... You and I talk about this all the time, when sequels are too late, like Dumb and Dumber or Dumb and Dumber-er.
See, this one works. It just like Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Exactly. Again, this worked, that worked. But again, do we need Beverly Hills Cop 5?
No.
Not really? I would like it, but I don't
need it. I would like it, but I don't think we need it. This, I feel like, is more wrapped up.
Yeah.
I feel like with Beverly Hills Cop, if they did a 5th one, they would almost have to have like Hector Elizondo take on his character again, you know?
Yep.
And I don't see them doing another one.
No.
Cause again, Eddie Murphy was kind of like, I don't want to do it unless it makes sense. Like, we wouldn't have Taggart in it, cause obviously John Ashton is gone. And Judge Reinhold, he's looking pretty rough these days.
Yeah.
Just age. You know, not anything against the guy. He's late 60s, but it's just, I don't see him running around like Eddie Murphy, who's, albeit a few years younger, he's a little bit more fit. So,
yeah.
But I mean, you never know. They could. Top Gun, I feel like, perfectly left it off to where it doesn't need another one.
Yep.
But the way that they titled it as Maverick, it's like it's tying up Maverick's story.
Yeah.
So they technically could do another Top Gun and then, do serialized pieces that are like one-offs of, different Top Gun students at, different points in time, or, taking somebody from the original one and having them leading a different Top Gun class.
Yep.
Although I don't think it would do anything without Tom Cruise.
No, so. It's not going to. And, Iceman typed it out the best way. It's time to let go. But it's one of those things where, I don't think this needs to be a triple shot franchise. I didn't like when it came out in 22, I didn't like, I wasn't against it, but it wasn't that I felt I needed to absolutely see it. Of course, in 2022, I was a little busy figuring out life and figuring out what was, where I was going to live, let alone go to a damn movie. But like, even after I got settled here in Indiana 3 years ago, I still didn't think I this was the first time I had ever seen Top Gun Maverick. I have not watched that movie before this viewing to do this podcast. I've watched it once and I like it, and I'll probably watch it again at some point in the future, whatever, just like its original film. But I don't feel like we need a whole Top Gun universe. Not everything has to be a universe, people.
No, and I feel like a lot of films just need to leave it, you know, 2 to 3 films, move on.
Yep. For the original film, Top Gun, 1986, 0 to 5 with half points, what are you going to give it?
The first, I'll probably give it 4.5. I would give it higher, except I don't like to give out fives very often, and there were some scenes I could have done without.
Yeah. I can handle those scenes, but I agree with you. It was just a little
long,
but yeah. So 4.5 for the original. What about the sequel? What are you going to give the sequel?
I'll probably give it the same thing. I'll give it the same, because I genuinely enjoyed both films. And I feel like they kind of fit together rather nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put it together, it's a solid 9 out of 10.
Yes.
But yeah, that's, yeah. I would give it a 4.5. There were a couple scenes that kind of were long in the tooth, like Hangman, just not letting things go.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then all of the stuff kind of culminating in different areas, that like the fake outs of the different Top Gun students dying.
Yeah, that was
a little annoying. So, I mean, I'll give it because of that, but overall, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. 4.5. 4.5's all around. Both films, double feature, double shot here inside Studio 2009 for Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick. I think that's all she wrote, folks. We're going to go to a quick ad break. You're going to hear some podcast ads and some other stuff. We'll come back to close the show right after this.
Hello, geeks and geekettes. Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Are you missing entertainment in your life? Welcome to Captain Ruggles Gaming. Whether it's guides, roleplay content, or our shenanigans with our collaborations with the 20 years standing strong Fart Clan, also known as Fast Action Response Team, or the Wrecking Crew, we have something for everyone. So join us when we traverse the cosmos of space games, survive the undead in zombie games, or just having fun in first-person shooters or random indie games. Visit us now at geekcastradio.com and youtube.com/@CaptainRuggles, or Google search Captain Ruggles Gaming. It's game time, and I'll see you out on the battlefield.
Hello everyone, this is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top 3 lists.
Okay, yeah, thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
On top of our main show every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com. Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hi there, Boss fans. My name is Jesse Jackson, and I'm the host of Set Lusting Bruce, a Bruce Springsteen fan podcast. For the past decade, my guests and I have shared heartfelt conversations, unforgettable fan stories, and deep dives into the lyrics that have shaped our lives. From the passionate debates over sways and waves, deciding on if Mary gets in the car or not, to deep dives from Greetings to Letter to You. We've covered it all because Springsteen isn't just music. He is a great companion on this part of the ride. So grab your suitcase and your ticket, put on your favorite Springsteen t-shirt, and join me for our 10th anniversary year. Set Lusting Bruce, 10 years strong and still making our way to the land of hope and dreams.
I know what we're doing today.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the GeekCast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
Okay, then. Carry on.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
One last thing. Who's the better pilot? You or me?
This is a nice moment. Let's not ruin it.
All right, folks, we are back here inside Studio 2009, Top Gun Maverick double feature. Any final thoughts from you, sir? Anything you'd like to say before I run through what's coming up on the podcast?
No.
Okay, then. Well, folks, coming up on Studio 2009, we've got... Well, we've got an 11-part saga. My buddy Sean and I are going to do all 11 Fast Saga films. And we're going to do them in the order that they're supposed to be done in, not the order that they were released in. Which means that Tokyo Drift takes place between Fast and Furious 6 and 7. We are going to interrupt that a little bit because F9 and F10 will be episodes 151 and 152 of the podcast. Episode 150, though, we are debuting the next Origin series for the GeekCast Radio Network. And that is Origins in Television. 30 questions all about your TV watching habits. Steve will be a guest on in the future, as will Optimus Solo, as will Comic Concierge Dan Clark. So I've got three people lined up already. I'll have my origins done at some point as well. So that's what's coming up. We've got the Summer of Going Fast. So, yeah. And then after that, I have no idea. I think Dave Draper and I are going to do some more Star Wars stuff. You and I have to do Shifting Gears Season 1, so we'll do that. Yeah, I think you and I are also doing 30th anniversary for Judge Dredd. And after that, we'll see where we land. because I don't know where we're going to land after that. So thank you for joining us here inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can also hit up shop.geekcastradio.com for t-shirts and mugs and mouse pads. Oh my, I think we have mouse. Do we have mouse pads? I don't know.
I don't know if that's an availability thing.
Come on, fourth wall. Do your job. Who knows? You can send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. We're on all the podcatching clients you choose to use. We're on Twitter @GeekCastRadio for the network, @ItStudio2009 for the podcast. I am @TF2N Mike. You're still on the Twitter thing, right?
Yes. I still find it more useful than other platforms. Just saying.
Uh-huh. And that would be?
Mine is @SCP21.
There you go. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/geekcastradionetwork. You can also check out Altered Geek Studio 2009 podcast and a bunch of other things for our pages over on Facebook. As I mentioned, next time my buddy Sean will be here. We're going to start the Fast saga with 2001's The Fast and the Furious. That movie will be 25 years old next year. Holy crap. We old, man. We old. Oh, boy. For now, I am TFG on Mike with
Steve Megatron.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.